Welcome, everyone, to another edition of Community in Depth, and I am very happy to have on the phone with us today the dynamic duo of Helen Strike. She is the president of the Regina Hospital in Hastings and also the River Falls Hospital, and we are joined also again by Dr. Melody McKenzie. She is the lead primary care physician at the Hastings Alina Clinic. She's also the director of medical affairs at Regina. Thank you both for calling in today. We're so grateful.
Thanks for having us.
Helen, let's start with you. I know that last week, Governor Walz opened up a little bit more of our state in that elective surgeries can once again be scheduled. And it's not like you haven't been doing surgeries, but what really was an elective surgery and how does that impact what you're doing now?
Thanks, Mo. I think we're all learning a new definition for elective surgery because elective doesn't really, nobody really wants to have surgery, I don't think. So I think our new definition is need to do surgery. So beginning this week, actually, on the 11th, the governor opened up restrictions on his executive order of emergency-only surgeries to allow us to come into two other categories, which are urgent need to do's and need to do now sort of surgery. So that allowed us to relook at cancer surgeries and make sure everyone who has a cancer diagnosis is able to have the surgery that they need starting this week. It also opened up the ability for individuals in severe pain to have certain procedures or injections that they may not have been had the week before. And then we're constantly looking at procedures as well, like endoscopies and colonoscopies. There are folks sitting out there with some symptoms that we need to watch to make sure that they don't have a pending cancer. So all of those have been added onto our schedule over the next couple of weeks. It's pent-up demand, of course, that we're working with now, and we should see actually a reduction again in surgeries that we're doing maybe 3 or 4 weeks from now, certainly at Regina, because we don't have all of our clinics open yet in a way that we might have before. And, of course, we know people are not seeking health care right now. Our ERs and our clinic volumes are still way down compared to what they were before. So we need people to, if they're worried about certain things, have symptoms of something they're concerned about, like abdominal pain or joint pain, they need to come in to see their physician so that we can make sure that they're being cared for in a way that they should.
And also when it comes to elective surgeries or any kind of surgeries, you have to have a physical before you have a surgery also. So how is that going to work? And for people that, let's say they were scheduled for surgery the 1st of April and things kind of came to a halt, do you then schedule them first before you schedule? I mean, those seem like those might be some logistical issues.
The way we're looking at the surgeries is our surgeons have, of course, been keeping a list of all the patients, and we have two of those that were scheduled and were canceled. And so we're relooking with our surgery. It's a very tight process. We have to have reasons to do these surgeries. We can't just bring everybody in. They have to be in those two additional categories of surgeries that are need to do. So we are looking at every case. We're assigning a number to them about how do they look in terms of being urgent or need to do. The surgeons are assisting us to get patients on the schedule when they're accepted and get a communication with them. When they are assigned a time to come in for their surgery that has been delayed or canceled, then it turns over to Melody's clinic to look after the pre-op.
Our surgeons, nurses are extremely busy right now. They're calling all of these patients. The surgeons have decided who needs surgery probably first, and then they're contacting the patients to tell them that they do have the ability to get them scheduled for surgery. So there is a process. It's not just as simple as when we used to bring people in and do their pre-op. So what we ask is they first of all have to be scheduled for a pre-op. We have 3 to 4 of our primary care providers between Cottage Grove Alina and Hastings Alina that are actually seeing patients in person. So a pre-op is something that qualifies for needing to be face-to-face with a provider in an exam room. So they're actually coming in, seeing the provider, having their pre-op done, any testing, EKG, chest x-ray, lab tests, just like we normally would do. Then they get scheduled for COVID testing. So 2 to 5 days before surgery, they are scheduled to have a COVID test done. So it can either be, depending on the site and which swabs they have, it's either a throat swab or a nose swab. And that's dictated by what equipment we have testing ability at that site at that day. So right now, most of our patients are going up to Woodbury. Hopefully soon, they'll be able to do their COVID testing for surgeries in Hastings. But right now, it's being done in Woodbury. And the reason is those have to be turned around very rapidly, and we need to assure that they're done in a timely manner. So they're specifically sent somewhere on a priority status so that they're done before surgery. So they have to have their pre-op done, they have to have a COVID testing done 2 to 5 days before surgery. And then the last thing we actually ask them to do is we ask them to quarantine themselves between the time they have the test and the time that they have the surgery. And the reason is we don't want them out around a lot of other people where they could pick up COVID. And there's a couple reasons for it. We don't want them coming into the hospital with COVID and exposing the hospital employees and staff and other patients to COVID. But we also know that if patients have COVID and undergo surgery, they're at higher risk for complications. So we do everything we can to protect them. But it is a little onerous. If they're at home with their spouse, if they're both at home working from home, then they're a pair and that's okay. If they have a spouse that's working outside of the home or other family members that are coming and going, then we ask them that if they can really kind of self-isolate on another floor of the house or try and separate themselves as best they can between the time of testing and surgery.
Tell us a little bit about some of the other services that you're going to be offering.
Big things we've brought back is mammograms. Because this is such an important part of getting preventative health done, we've been able to open up our medical imaging department and bring mammograms back for our community.
And in the clinic, we're doing leaps and colposcopies on women, some other services that are being given by the specialists. Some of them are coming back into the clinic. Some of them are being offered at other specialty clinics. But things like pulmonary consults and those things, even if they're not done locally, we're starting to be able to at least offer those services back to our patients.
Will you face a backlog?
Oh, yes. We know there's a backlog, and our biggest concern is that we want to make sure that we don't lose any of these patients to follow-up. So most of our systems nowadays, because of the computerized medical records, we can keep track of patients, and we've asked people to keep track of patients so that we don't lose anyone to follow-up, because we don't want to miss the opportunity to help someone potentially find an early cancer, look at their medical problems before they become serious. So we take it seriously, and we want to try and make sure that we take care of these patients, even if there's been a delay in care.
And if we have had a doctor's appointment canceled, should we just wait for you to contact us to reschedule, or should we do that?
So it really depends. If it's a regular follow-up, right now we have lots of providers who can give you care. A lot of our care is done over the phone and virtually and doesn't need to be done in person. And for those patients, there's actually really, really good access right now. We see a lot of our diabetic patients, our heart patients, our lung patients, our patients with chronic depression. We do either a phone or a virtual patient a visit. So they're in their home and they're looking at me and I'm in the clinic or in the hospital or in my basement talking to them. And then if they need lab tests, then I just let my nurse know and my nurse calls them back and we schedule a time for them to come into the clinic. They're masked and everyone else is masked. They come in and they have their lab tests and they go home. So a lot of patients actually find it fairly convenient. Obviously, it's not what we're used to. We're used to sitting face to face with them, but we can still take care of their chronic medical problems. And we want to, because we don't want people to suffer down the road because we haven't taken care of it.
Do you think that's something that might continue, more virtual appointments being offered?
I think it will. I don't think it will ever be what it is right now. There's some benefits to it and there's some drawbacks. We still need to sometimes see patients face to face. I think it is going to change how we practice medicine and make us question what we can do without having a patient in the office, especially follow-ups for medications or depression and anxiety. Psychology appointments are wonderful to do over the phone because a patient can sit at home. They don't have to go into the clinic. And it's really pushed the boundaries of insurances looking at this and saying, okay, what can we do? And is it a good way of practicing medicine? So it'll change how we practice medicine.
You mentioned some of the testing that's done before a surgery, but is the public still able to get COVID-19 tests done?
Anyone with symptoms, Governor Walz announced that he wanted everyone to have that ability. So we've been just over a week and a half now, we've been doing the COVID curbside testing at the Nininger Clinic in the parking lot. And anyone who has one symptom or more can have COVID testing done, ideally within 72 hours of the symptoms beginning, because that's the most likely time that we'll catch the virus. And you can just call into Allina or talk to a provider at Allina, and they can give you the phone number to call, and they can schedule you. You come in, it's a drive-through kind of tent area, and we have one of our providers go out and meet with you, and they make sure that you're doing okay. They explain the test, do the test, you go home, and then one of our RNs, that all they do is give results of COVID. They follow all of these, and as soon as they come back, they call the patient, they explain the test results. Again, we do ask that if you have symptoms concerning for COVID and we're testing you, that you do stay at home and isolate until you get your test back. We don't want you going around everywhere and then us calling you 2 days later and finding out you had COVID and you've been visiting a whole bunch of people that we then have to contact and quarantine.
So if somebody is diagnosed with COVID, is there a protocol then that you start contacting people they've been around, or how does that work?
Yes, so that goes through the Department of Health, and they are ramping up the people, the tracers, that call people and they talk to you about where you've been and what your contacts are. And that's how we are trying to get a hold and handle on this and trying to decrease the amount of people that are getting infected.
And I know because of state statute that we are not able to know how many cases are in Hastings, but can you at least tell us if the number is going up? Is it going down? Is it staying the same?
I can answer that a little bit just in Minnesota, because yesterday and the day before were the first days that we've been over 5,000 tests done in Minnesota, and that was the moonshot that the governor was hoping to get to 20,000 tests per week. And so as we are able to do 5,000 a day, that makes a big difference. And because we're doing so much more testing of symptomatic people now that we have better test availability, Minnesota added 695 COVID-19 positive cases to our roster. And that means the more people that we test, the more likely we are to find the disease, which is, of course, the key and the ticket to opening Minnesota, is to know and be able to track and trace where our positive citizens are. Today also added 23 new deaths to Minnesota. And I'm just looking now, we're at 12,000, nearly 500 cases in Minnesota. So we're certainly climbing. And the number of deaths have climbed with that additional 23 deaths. And I think it's important for us to think about that only just under 65 days ago did we have the first positive case in Minnesota. So we have had a tremendous amount of activity given the last 65 days. So what's important to think about is that the more we test, the better it is. But the more we test, the more cases we find, the more that we have to be concerned about opening up the state.
I know that in the news we've heard about this pediatric multi-symptom inflammatory syndrome, which perhaps is COVID-related, that presents itself in children. Do either of you want to speak to that?
Nothing about COVID is known, so this is all the new world. And we know that children, for the most part, have been spared, and most of them don't have a lot of symptoms. But now what we're starting to see, at least especially out in New York, where they've had large number of cases of COVID, are some of these children showing symptoms that we think are late effects of COVID. So when they've tested these children, they are not having active COVID, but they have antibodies to COVID, which indicates they've been infected. What we know is not a lot yet. We'll know more tomorrow, next week, next month, next year. But it's sort of like what happens with the adults. The adults get sick later, not initially. Most of them get sick later, and it's their body's response to the virus. And this is what we're seeing in some of these children. It's just presenting in a different way. So they're getting inflammation. They get inflammation in their vessels. They can get inflammation in their lungs. Inflammation in the heart is the one that's most concerning. It's somewhat similar to another disease that we sometimes see in children that's rare, and this seems rare, and right now they're treating it similar. So the most important thing is, you know, if your child has an unusual rash or they just feel very ill, red eyes, strawberry, what we call a strawberry tongue, where it's bright red or a high fever associated with any of those symptoms, then they need to see someone. It can be a virtual visit with their doctor. It can be our emergency room where we have pediatric telehealth if needed. But they just need to reach out and they need us to look at it and decide, because this is not something simple that we can just say, we just do a strep test. We have to look at the child. We have to decide whether they need testing. But we know about it. So that's the most important thing. We know about it. We know what to watch for. We know what to think of. And they just need to reach out and ask if they're concerned.
Tell us a little bit about what you think opening the state again will look like.
Well, I like the analogy that the governor uses of turning the dial. I think there's still concern in Minnesota. This number of testing is going up, but we're seeing a number of cases. We're still seeing a significant number of deaths every day. So those are all those things that are important about the dial being turned farther towards opening. So it'll be an interesting conversation that the governor has with us in the next couple of days. I think what opening up looks like is going to be in small pieces. So we may see something about restaurants opening a little bit more, or retail stores, smaller retail stores being able to open. We're hopeful of that. I sit on the Hastings Chamber Board, and it's a huge concern for Hastings and the surrounding communities that our small businesses are really struggling. And I'm hopeful that we can see some opening there with really strong precautions and plans that our businesses have.
My vision would be that we slowly open up, and I think that's what Governor Walz has always been very transparent with, that as we open, we will see more cases, and so testing will be important. I think the most important thing is what we've been always talking about, social distancing, not being in large crowds, and when we're out in public, ideally it'd be nice if we could all wear a mask. If we all did that, that would really help stem the tide and let us open up this town, this state, and even this country faster, as if we all pitched in and just did those things to protect each other, we would be able to open up faster. But we can't just open the doors. We know if we open the doors, we're just going to have to go backwards and shut everything down again. We have to do it slowly.
Well, we appreciate both of you calling in today. And before we go, I just have two things. I want to give a shout out to your ER, Dr. Lipinski.
Yeah.
7 stitches later for little guy. It's all good.
Oh.
Thank you. Some, I don't know, it was some accident that only happens to boys, you know. Who knows how it happened, but she did a great job, so thank you for that. And then my second thing is I've got to start working the word schedule into my vocabulary because it's so sophisticated, Helen.
Oh.
Thank you both for all you do, and thank you for taking the time to inform our listeners about what is going on in Hastings. We want to thank Helen Strike. She's the president of the Regina Hospital and the River Falls Hospital. And we also want to thank Dr. Melody McKenzie. She's the lead primary care physician at the Hastings Alina Clinic, and she's also the director of medical affairs at Regina. Thank you both, and I'm hoping that we will be talking again sometime and we'll be almost back to normal.
Thank you, Mo.
Well, thank you, Mo.
Thank you. And you are listening to another edition of Community in Depth on AM 1460 and FM 97.7 KDWA in Hastings.